So again, a really warm welcome to everybody, wherever you might be, whomever you might be. So today, I'd like to talk a little bit about there's a brief sutta. Maybe not talk so much about the sutta itself, but something in there that the Buddha says. And he says there are two powers. Two powers. In some ways, that kind of even feels powerful to even talk about two powers. Some of you might know that there's this list of the five powers that is similar to the, not similar, it's almost pretty much exactly the same as the five faculties. And that's not what I'm talking about. And this idea of two powers, and we might think of, well, what is meant by this word power? And we could consider it's the ability to do something or to act in a particular way, to have a certain amount of power. We might also think that, or the same word strength is there. And this word in Pali, bala, that's getting translated as power. Some translators use this word strength. Two strengths, two powers. We might also think that power or strength is the ability to influence. Influence ourselves, make ourselves do things, or influence others. And we might also think of power that, you know, something is powerful when it really touches us, when it moves us. We often talk about powerful movies, books, Dharma talks, when it affects some change or some experience in somebody. So to have power is also to maybe touch somebody, whether it's ourselves or others. And to be sure, power can also have negative uses and connotations. The oppression of people, injustice, these terrible things. And that's not what I'm talking about. The Buddha here, he's talking about power. Maybe strength is a better word. And I was reflecting, like, what about this word power? Why would the Buddha talk about power? And I thought, well, maybe it's because it's to counteract this idea of powerlessness. Sometimes we begin a meditation practice, we begin any spiritual practice, because we have this feeling of powerlessness in a way that is takes the wind out of our sails, so to speak, or maybe we feel stuck and like we can't find our way. We can't make ourselves, quote unquote, do what we know should be done or something like that. So maybe it's an antidote or a counteract, something about this feeling of powerlessness. Maybe also this word power, it's kind of associated with this, the idea, the experience of being empowered. To feel, to experience, to have the capacity to affect change, to do something, to have some agency. So the Buddha talked about these two powers. And what are they? So one is the power of reflection, and the second is the power of cultivation. And sometimes we might think like, oh, really? I was hoping it'd be something a little bit more inspiring than reflection and cultivation. But we might use these two powers, these two strengths, something like the power of reflection, we might consider it something like choosing a trail on a map, a hiking trail, that we want to go on. And that's the reflection. Where do I want to go? And then while we're on that trail, like while we're hiking, like to reflect, am I on the trail? Am I on the right trail? For some reason, my map reading skills are not the best. This is something I have a little difficulty with. So I'm often wondering, am I on the right trail? So just this reflection. And then cultivation might be the actual going on the trail, the actual walking it. A little bit of effort required there. So the strengths of reflection and cultivation, and where do I want to go, and am I going there? It's the reflection, and cultivation is just going. So I'll just say a few words about the second one, cultivation, first, because I think that this is something that we're familiar with. And there's probably been countless Dharma talks about cultivation. Especially in this tradition, there's a real emphasis on this sense of development and to be sure the suttas are filled with the Buddha talking about to develop and cultivate. Develop and cultivate our ethical actions, our integrity, how we show up in the world. We can never be too ethical, like that doesn't even exist. So to reflect on, is this the right thing to do? What is the right thing to do? And to do the right thing. So to cultivate our sensitivity to ethics and then to do the ethical thing. The Buddha also talked about to cultivate having a steady mind. That's why we have a meditation practice, is to help the mind be steady or settled so that we might see things more clearly, so that we might understand things more clearly. And also there's to cultivate a warm heart, the Brahma-Vihara practice, so that we can increase our capacity to be with difficulties. If we have some Brahma-Viharas, some love, some compassion, joy, happiness when others are happy, and some equanimity, some steadiness when things aren't going the way that we expected, or even though we might love somebody dearly, we of course can't force them to do what we think is the most helpful. So to have some equanimity. And more specifically, the Buddha also talked about cultivating the seven factors of awakening. I'm not going to talk about these this morning, but many of you know mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, and wisdom. So in some ways, the power of cultivation for our practice is not that different than how it is for maybe an agricultural simile or agricultural metaphor, that we don't make plants grow. They grow themselves. But we create the conditions, helping them with water, with sun, fertilizer, or a good quality soil. So in the same way, cultivation is about creating the conditions and recognizing that we don't make these things happen. We just put the conditions in place as best we can. As best we can. So that's one of the powers of cultivation. Just to remind you of probably what you've heard in many different Dharma talks. Now I'd like to talk a little bit more about this idea of the power of reflection. Because sometimes it's easy to be dismissive of this capacity that humans have to reflect. So what does it mean to reflect? Maybe one way to think about it is to put our experience, whatever it is that we're having, into a larger context. And importantly, to do it in a warm-hearted way. So not only are we putting our experience in a larger context, seeing the bigger picture, but we're not doing that in such a way that it creates the conditions for us to beat ourselves up. We don't want to activate this inner critic or to have this oppressive feeling like I should be this way, that should be that way, or whatever it might be. Because this reflection loses its power, we could think, if it's coupled with this heavy, oppressive sense of how things should be. But instead, can we just have this gentle inquiry, this reflection, does what I'm doing right now support my life? Does it support my practice? Is it going in the direction, does it, that I want my life and my practice to go? Not in a heavy-handed and not in a clunky, awkward way, but just to periodically just check in. Some practices have this idea of check the attitude. So maybe in the same way we can kind of like check in. Our attitude often is has an effect that we don't see if we don't notice it. So, of course, if we want to eat better, more vegetables, whatever it might be, we could just periodically reflect while we're eating, opening up that bag of cookies. Does this support my life, this direction I want to go? In the same way, if our practice with ethics, our practice with steadying the mind, our cultivation of some warm-heartedness, does the way that I'm speaking with others, does the way that I'm approaching my meditation practice, does this support my life? Does it support my practice? And so one way we can do this is to reflect on our reason for practicing. Why do we have a meditation practice? Why do we work on our ethical practice, the way we show up in the world, interact with others? When we know why we're doing something, it can be a tremendous support. It helps us put it in that bigger context and helps us to know which direction we're going. What is the purpose? What do you want to experience? What do you want to have more of in your life? Or what would you like to understand better? Or what would you like to penetrate more deeply? Or what would you like to open yourself up to? Or maybe what would you like to touch more intimately in your experiences? Again, to have this reflection in a way that is in a relaxed, easy manner, and not in a way that is a disguised inner critic. But just have some clarity of the direction we're going. And this idea of periodically reflecting of the purpose of why we're doing this, there's a story that's told by John C. Maxwell about a person who sees some bricklayers who are working. Perhaps you've heard this story. And this person goes up to the first bricklayer and says, "What are you doing?" And the person responds, "I'm laying bricks." Okay, simple enough. And then the person goes up to the second bricklayer and asks, "What are you doing?" And the second bricklayer says, "I'm putting up a wall." Okay, so a little bit bigger context. There's a purpose for what the bricklayer is doing. But then the person goes up to the third bricklayer and asks, "What are you doing?" And the third bricklayer says, I'm building a cathedral. Even a bigger context than a way that feels inspiring. So we can say that maybe the first bricklayer, and it might be completely appropriate at times to just notice, I'm just putting one brick here. And not have the bigger context, but just have this here. But there also could be a way in which that feels, could be a little bit half-hearted, I'm just laying bricks, you know, without a sense of purpose or a sense of a direction in which they're going. It could feel like it's never-ending and it doesn't matter the quality or how I do it. To the second bricklayer that's talking about building a wall, maybe they have a sense of they want to have a sense of completion. If there's a succinct or defined objective that they have, so you say, okay, well, I'm going to stay with laying bricks until this wall is built. But then the third bricklayer, this idea of building a cathedral, there's a way in which the bricklayer might put their whole heart into the practice. And that's, they feel inspired that they're part of this big, beautiful thing that will be of service to others, service to themselves, can help others connect to the divine, perhaps. Or so to reflect on occasion, what is the purpose of what we're doing? And to recognize that how we answer it, it might affect the attitude in which we are approaching what we're doing. So not only setting the direction in terms of where we're going, but also influencing the attitude. And then this attitude, I'm using this word, might, whether we're doing it wholeheartedly, or maybe we could say whether we're doing it cavalierly or casually, or whether we're just bringing ourselves to it and feel inspired and open to the possibilities, like this third bricklayer. So, well, maybe I'll just say that I know this. There's a story of somebody who wanted to lose weight, a significant amount of weight, a lot of weight. And this person did, and then was sharing with others how he had done it, and you know, some of his secrets, quote-unquote. And when he was asked why he had done it in the first place, he tells the story of that he wanted to fit into a Star Wars costume, like a really serious Star Wars costume, you know, one that's like might have actually been used on the Star Wars set. He wanted to be thin enough so that he can fit into one of those costumes of a character. Now I don't remember the character's name. And the reason why he wanted to fit into one of those the costumes is because his nephew, a young child, had cancer and was being treated for cancer. And he wanted to show up in this Star Wars uniform for the birthday party that was coming up for this little boy that had cancer. Somehow that feels inspiring, and we can imagine that it's so much easier to do something that is difficult if we have a purpose, and if we're imagining that it could really benefit somebody. So this is something that we might use as a support for our own meditation practice, because let's be honest, sometimes it's not easy to get to the cushion. Or if we do get to the cushion, the mind and the body are feeling restless and it's not so easy to stay on the cushion. But we can see we're having a reflection of why we're doing this. And to have the why be something that allows us to have an attitude of open-heartedness, wholeheartedness, can be really powerful. It can be a power to support us in our practice. But this idea of a reflection not only can help support why we're doing something, but it also can help us with discover if the way that we're practicing is going to help us go the direction we wish to go. Recognizing that the goal and the means are so interrelated. Do we have the goal to have more freedom? Then is the way that we're practicing a way that brings freedom into our practice, a certain amount of ease, or is there a constricted sense of, I have to do this, I should do this? If the goal, quote-unquote, the direction we're heading, the purpose, is to understand things more clearly, understand ourselves, then are we meeting each moment with a sense of curiosity and openness? Oh, what's this? Or do we have a sense of like just noting and going to the next thing because we have to get to understanding and, oh, I'm not going to bother with the sensations on my body with the cushion or the sound or whatever it is. So to reflect in the way in which we are practicing and to recognize that the means and the goal are intimately tied together. And so is the manner in which we're practicing supportive. So this brings this idea of the art of practice is then coupling these two notions. That is, maybe discovering the middle way between having some clarity about why we are practicing, the direction we're going, and allowing the practice to unfold. Finding the middle way between having this idea we wanted to go here, but not forcing it to go there, not making it, not white-knuckling our way through, not using a sledgehammer with our practice, but instead creating the conditions in which the practice can unfold. So this is really the art of practice, is maybe it's not going the direction that we think we would like it to go, that we have set as our purpose, but at the same time, we could see, oh, there's some understanding here, there's some freedom here, there's some ease here in the way it's unfolding. I didn't think it was going to unfold this way. It wasn't my preference for it to unfold this way. But I can bring the direction I want to go into this moment. This really is the art of practice, of having an intention, having a direction, and allowing it to unfold. And finding this middle way is something that we do over and over again in practice. So we can even reflect on our relationship between this idea of doing, I have to make things go a particular way, and being, quote unquote, just allowing things to be. Could just do a general reflection, which do we feel more comfortable with? Doing, making things happen, or being, just allowing things? And to recognize that practice requires both, a certain amount of doing and a certain amount of being. And are we privileging one over the other, or are we not even recognizing that there's times for both? So part of our reflection can be is this balance between doing and being. I'm using doing and being as these kind of generic words about the amount of effort that we're doing that's being applied, or maybe even the amount of self that's having a sense of agency of one who is making things happen. So that could maybe another reflection is this balance and what are our ideas of how practice works, quote unquote, like what propels or moves practice forward towards greater and greater ease, greater and greater freedom and understanding. And to reflect in our conceptions, our assumptions about the amount of effort that might be needed. And then, of course, to reflect on the potential and the actual consequences of our actions, all of our actions. Reflection can be enormously powerful if we are reflecting, is this going to cause harm for myself, for others, for both? Might this be harmful? Of course, we don't know everything, but we can just do a quick reflection. Is there a way in which this might unfold and that it's harmful? And I think many of us know, have heard this story where the Buddha is teaching his son, Rahula, to reflect before, during, and after every action of body, speech, and mind. Is this for harm? Will it harm myself? Will it harm others? Or will it harm both myself and others? And of course, if it's going to cause harm, we don't do it. And of course, there'll be times in which we are mistaken. We didn't think it was going to cause harm, and then it ends up causing harm. And then we make amends as best we can, and then move forward. So this power of reflection of where we're going, this attitude that we have towards going there, including our relationship between being and doing, this can be such a fruitful place to reflect and to recognize whether we have a preference for one or the other. But rather than having to choose, like, oh, I should have to make things happen, or no, it's just about allowing, can we recognize that part of navigating, part of balancing, part of finding the middle way is to have a little bit of being, a little bit of doing at the right time, in the right dose. And then, of course, to reflect on the consequences of any action we might have. So when we think about it this way, we could see why the Buddha talked about the power of reflection. Can you imagine if there was no reflection, none of those considerations, and was just mindlessly, so to speak, doing anything and everything willy-nilly, allowing ourselves to be pushed around by our preferences or pushed around by what others are saying or what we're experiencing at that moment. So instead, the power of reflection and the power of cultivation, these two powers that allow our lives and our practice to unfold in a way that not only don't harm ourselves or harm others, but might benefit ourselves and benefit others, so that we might be a force of good in this life and in this world that needs it. We need all the good. So, thank you very much.